Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of I Mean It's Possible, a conspiracy theory podcast from two guys who really don't believe in conspiracy theories. Though if you've been following along this season, you may have found that we've been slowly believing in a few more than we had planned to. My name is Kyle Maxwell. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and friend, Bobby Anderson. Bobby, you're going to be taking the reins on this one. So before I turn it over to you, I just want to give you a little update because you are the editing guy. You are the mixing guy. I have been a little bit more on the release side of things in terms of taking a look at our analytics. And I want to give a shout out to all of our listeners in all the countries we definitely never thought were going to listen to our podcast. And I say that with real joy. Bobby and I are getting a kick out of finding exactly how many people are listening in places we really never thought were going to get into two guys from central Massachusetts. So a big shout out to all of our listeners in the United Kingdom, Germany, Spain, Sweden, Belgium, Canada, Lebanon, the Netherlands, Argentina, Malta, Switzerland, the Faroe Islands, Uganda. Shout out to Uganda. You go, Uganda. Norway, Australia, Puerto Rico, Denmark, Ireland, India, New Zealand, Romania, Guam, Finland, Turkey, and Italy. I don't think we ever thought that many countries would. We know how the internet works, folks. We just didn't think you were going to listen. We did this for ourselves and for fun, but a lot of people are digging it, which is really cool. We've noticed a lot of people tuning in recently, and we genuinely want to say thank you for listening. It's been really cool to see you listen to one episode and then click on the next one, and that's been really awesome, actually, because we do this with the spirit of positivity and goodwill. I think you can all feel that from us. So shout out to you. And if you're in one of the countries that's listening, remember you can email us at possiblepod@gmail.com and give us a shout out. Tell us why you're listening and where you're from, and maybe we'll give you another shout out on the next pod. So Bobby, with that set aside and that air of positivity just bursting out of us as we head into the episode, hello, and I'm going to turn it over to you. What are we doing today?
Well, I mean, first off, you told me we had a bump in listeners. I didn't realize it was like a We Are the World type bump in listeners.
It's everywhere.
Like, you told me, you were like, Bobby, we got a bunch of new listeners. I was like, cool, that's great, Kyle. I'm so happy about that. I'm going to list them off in our intro. Okay, I guess. Yeah, sure. I didn't realize
that our
tentacles were reaching further and further.
To be clear, and I think it's always fair, this is a fact-based podcast. We source our information. I'm going to be 100% honest with everybody. I'm not saying thousands of people are listening from each of those countries. It's very possible that it's literally just a few of you. So shout out to you, you few in Romania or India. I think it's awesome. One is great. We don't care. The volume isn't, you know, important to us. We're doing this for fun, and we're doing this to dig into new topics. And if you're connecting with us a million miles away, genuinely, one is enough. It's cool to see those flags come up. We have a little way of tracking sort of how we reach people and where we get them. And when we see the new flag come up, I think it's the coolest thing. So if it's one of you or 100 of you, big shout out. But with that said, big shout out to the UK, because you guys are bringing in a solid segment of our listening base. So not more of a shout out, but yeah, let's not lie. UK, bring it. Like, I want to know, where are you? Are you in Manchester? Are we talking Leeds? Are these Yorkshire lads?
You just want a Manchester United fan to connect with.
Yeah.
You're looking for an in.
But hold on.
From someone.
Hold on. We don't want to alienate everybody else except everyone in Liverpool. You can, I swear to God, Joe, jump in that goddamn river. I don't care. Okay, I want everyone to listen everywhere except the city of Liverpool. All right, even the Toffees, even Everton side. Just I don't want it. I don't want it. All right, is that bad? Is that wrong of me, Bobby?
I mean, we'll find out when next week comes out and our
listening base shoots through the floor. All of our listeners were from Liverpool, weren't they? Hello, there you go. I mean, you know, like, I'll give a shout out. Come on, I'll do a Wayne Rooney impression.
So, in the spirit of international, and I didn't know, like I said, that we had a international base growing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fitting with this week's topic.
Oh.
We're going to be traveling to the Loch.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's do it.
We're going to be making friends with good old Nessie.
All right. All right. By the way, Scotland not on the list. So, Bobby, talk to me about Nessie.
All right. So we established pretty much in the draft.
Stop right now. I want everyone to see. He's got his fingers. If you've ever seen the blooper from The Office where Andy does a little dance with his fingers over his mouth and finally breaks Oscar, he's doing exactly that. Okay. And I know that's a very narrow reference I just made, but he looks like a Bond villain crossed with like an English teacher that has a surprise and it's a pizza party because everyone did a good job. I just want to paint the picture for people because I have to look at it. And you look like you've got candy in your pocket. Okay? What? I'm sorry.
I just want to preface by saying that we established from all the way from episode zero with the Bigfoot episode and episode one that Nessie was going to be a hard sell.
Yeah.
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 This is by no means a slam dunk episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've got one ace in my hole, which, I mean, phrasing aside, is really all I'm banking on.
Okay.
To try to eke out a victory in this one.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with a few basic facts about Loch itself, about the Loch itself.
Okay. Loch Ness, right? Yeah. Okay.
I just want to say Loch Ness is huge.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a body of water 22 and a half miles long, and its maximum width
mm-hmm.
is 1.7 miles. So we are talking about like a runway. Right.
Yeah.
This is a very long, very thin body of water. It's also, for a lake, extremely deep. We're talking like the average depth in like the 430s, 430 feet. And that's average depth. Maximum depth is up over like 750.
That is a tremendous depth. Okay. I was not aware of the length. I have to say I was not aware of the length and the width. I knew it was deep. I always knew it would be deep. Otherwise, it would be really, really easy to dredge. So I knew that. I did not know that is really long. 22 miles is long.
22 and a half miles long.
Wow. That's really genuinely actually already changes the dynamics of my understanding of what that's actually. All right. Okay. So let's go from there.
I'm going to put it in a little bit of a perspective for you.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the interesting tidbits that I came across is that given its dimensions added on to its depth, right? It's the second in terms of like surface area, it's the second largest loch. But in terms of volume of water, because mm-hmm. of its depth,
yeah,
it contains more water than all of the other lakes and rivers in the UK and Wales and everything combined.
Right.
It is like the single biggest source of fresh water.
Wow.
In the UK, like volume.
Volume. This has a larger volume. That's incredible. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So from a science perspective, it's massive.
Yeah. So to read it verbatim, it contains more water than all the lakes in England and Wales combined. So the other thing that it has going for it, and we mm-hmm. talked about this in the Bigfoot episode, about how the ocean is really the only place for this sort of, you know, so big of an area that it's plausible it can't be found.
Right.
You can get from the loch to the ocean through the River Ness.
Oh.
It does. The River Ness it feeds into the north end of the loch and it feeds in from the ocean. So you can travel by water from Loch Ness and make it out to the ocean.
Wow.
So it's not open to the ocean. It's not like a bay.
Right. And the water's flowing away from the loch to the ocean. It empties into the ocean, right? It's not salt water flowing up. It's flowing out of the fresh water and into the ocean.
Because it's a fresh body of water.
Right.
So it does have ocean access, which we talked about in the Bigfoot episode as there's a lot of really weird stuff in the water, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of weird stuff in the water. So much in the same argument that I made for Bigfoot, right? Remember that I made the argument that it's such a large area and it's in such a remote place that it's opening up this possibility that we haven't, you know, we don't have eyes on this entire area at all times. And so that's sort of opening up the same thing for Loch Ness in the sense that we're talking about so much, like such a big volume of water to start with. And then you're going to top it off by saying, okay, and in the right conditions, I can make it to the ocean, right? Like a little bit of rainfall, the river gets a little bit deeper. You can get straight from the loch right to the ocean.
Right.
Right. Because there's varying depths in the river that connects it. Even in its shallowest parts, a little bit of rain, boom, that swells up. They're actually looking at ways to alleviate flooding from the River Ness.
Okay.
So it can become a big body of water at certain points. So you're talking about maybe a large animal
mm-hmm.
traveling from the ocean into the loch during a period of flood, during a high rise portion of the water.
Okay.
The water recedes. It's trapped in the loch for a month, 2 months, 6 months.
Right.
Conditions are right again. It finds its way back out to the ocean. Right. We're not talking about, and I think that's one of the big things. Everybody's like, it's a lake. How hard could it be to find? if it lives in the lake, it lives in the lake. It doesn't necessarily have to live in the lake at all times. Mm-hmm. And so my next piece of evidence is going to point to, again, very similar to the Bigfoot argument, in that if we can show traits and things in other species that exist, we can make the reasonable jump that whatever we're talking about here could have similar traits.
Right.
If we can show that something exists somewhere else, we can say that it's not unreasonable for it to exist in our case.
Sure.
So especially in terms of sea creatures, mm-hmm. sea turtles, right?
Okay.
Will travel long distances across oceans to lay their eggs in the same spot where they were born.
Mm-hmm.
They've tracked great white sharks.
Yeah.
Will travel across oceans to birthing ground that they have mapped out as large areas of birthing grounds, right? So we've got animals that migrate, not like, you know, oh yeah, I'm going across the ocean or I'm going further down the coast. Literally like from one ocean to another ocean to return to a feeding ground, a birthing ground, a specific birthing place,
right.
right? Some sort of significance in terms of this thing was born here and it keeps coming back.
Okay.
That opens the possibility that we've got some sort of ocean creature, probably lives most of its life out in the ocean, comes back at certain times, every year, every few years, who knows, when conditions are right for flooding. When that happens, it travels back into the loch, lives in the loch, does what it needs to do, travels back out to the ocean. So now another thing that I want to look at is, you might be saying, okay, well, the ocean is the ocean, the loch is freshwater. There are species that travel between freshwater and saltwater. It's not unheard of. There are actually sharks. There's records of sharks traveling up the Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that.
Making it as far, there have been records of them like reaching very far north, like reaching like lakes in Kentucky, right? Like people are like, oh, little boy's bitten by a shark in a lake in Kentucky. It's not unheard of, right? It's not impossible.
Right.
So if we're talking about something that's very adaptable, right? Able to survive, making such a long journey like this, it's entirely possible that we're looking at some of these other traits that other sea animals exhibit.
Okay.
Now, the other thing I want to talk about is you're probably saying, okay, well, what about the loch itself? I don't know if you've ever seen any videos. There's been a lot of specials about
yeah.
the loch. Right. About Nessie, about Loch Ness Monster, all that sort of stuff. Any photos or videos you pull up taken underwater, after about 6 inches, it's useless. It is some of the muddiest, murkiest water that you will ever see. You go to some lakes, you can see all the way down to the bottom, not Loch Ness. And so it's attributed to the peat content. The scientific reasoning is that the peat content in the surrounding area is so high that it causes murkiness and muddiness.
Okay.
So you can't look, right? Cameras are pretty much useless. You can have cameras above, and they do. They actually have cameras that you can like log into and like monitor for the surface, but anything below the surface, a camera is useless. So now we're talking about needing to use some tech. So one of the things I want to bring up, and that's often brought up, is the use of sonar. So there have been large sonar expeditions. So the first one that came up in my research took place in 1954. And so I'm just going to read the passage straight from this. In December of 1954, sonar readings were taken by the fishing boat Rival 3. Its crew noted a large object keeping pace with the vessel at a depth of 479 feet. It was detected for 2,600 feet before contact was lost. Previous sonar attempts were inconclusive or negative. So they had something following the boat. It was
right.
deep down. It followed them for a good while, and then it disappeared. Now, that's not anything conclusive, right?
Right.
But if you're starting to say like, okay, well, why can't we just use sonar and find it? Because sonar will tell you what's there and what's not there, but it doesn't tell you, it'll tell you something's there, right? Sonar can't differentiate between a giant rock and a giant animal, right? And there's instances of even large schools of fish. A large school of fish could be shown on sonar as one large thing, when really it's like just a normal school of small fish. So there's another sonar imaging attempt, 2011. On the 24th of August, 2011, Loch Ness boat captain Marcus Atkinson photographed a sonar image of a 5-foot unidentified object that seemed to follow his boat for 2 minutes at a depth of 75 feet, and due to its motion and the way it moved, ruled out the possibility of a small fish or seal. That was dismissed as most likely being a bloom of algae or zooplankton. Okay, so like I'm saying, there's anomalies in the water.
Mm-hmm.
These sonar images, you say like, okay, well, let's just get a big sonar, you know, expedition. For every sonar expedition, there's going to be anomalies that turn up because you're not going to be able to chase down every little thing that you find. Some of them you'll be able to explain away. Hey, we got something big and deep down there. Oh, it's a school of fish. Okay, we got something else that's big and deep down there. I don't know, it disappeared before we could figure out what it was. Right. So sonar readings are going to be inconclusive for the most part.
And it's and not to cut you off, but isn't sonar also most useful for things that aren't moving?
Yeah.
like for finding things like boats at the bottom of the ocean, or even like, you know, not to be morbid, something like a body or something that's stationary, that's been weighed down, because the sonar will kick back and give you a clearer image of what it is. But if something's moving, maybe constantly moving, it's a lot harder to like nail it as a part of a sonar, right?
Sonar is a snapshot, right? You're sending out like a, if you're going to put it in terms of something that we're more able to, like a flashlight, right? If you're standing in a dark room and you've got a flashlight and you turn it on and off real quick, you get a quick glimpse of what's around you. Right, the difference is you're turning it on and off super fast. And as technology has gotten better and better, that technology has gotten better and better. And so you're able to put together better, you know, stitchings of these pictures. But it's still not super accurate. If you turn that flashlight on and off real quick and you see a giant shadowy figure standing in the middle of the room, and that's the only thing you see, you're like, oh my God, what? That could have been anything. That could have been a person. That could have been could have been Bigfoot. It's only until you can actually like flip the light on, get your hands on it, investigate it, that you find out it's, you know, three kids in a trench coat.
All right, so like in all honesty, we're talking about the sonar technology, and that's actually my biggest sort of like, I'm not surprised that the sonar technology hasn't brought anything up, because I don't know if I should tell you this now. I don't think Loch Ness as a community wants us to solve this, but I'll touch on that later. That's all. That's my biggest thing with the sonar. It's like, of course the sonar hasn't worked.
Well, so there's been some other sonar studies. So there's one also that took place in 1967 and 68. Dr. Gordon Tucker, D. Gordon Tucker, chair of the Department of Electronic and Electrical Engineering at the University of Birmingham, volunteered his services as a sonar developer and expert at Loch Ness in 68. And so he basically put together a sonar expedition that was described as an acoustic net across the loch through which no moving object could pass undetected, right? So this is this is essentially what you were saying, is like, okay, well, what about movement, right? So in this case, he basically was able to set up almost like a sonar net. And so anything that moved would get picked up.
Okay.
So during the 2-week trial in August, multiple targets were identified. One was identified as probably a shoal of fish, but others moved in a way not typical of shoals at speeds up to 10 knots, which is about 11, 12 miles an hour. So like, we've got something moving in there. This goes back to the idea that sonar is ever only going to show you one of two things. It's going to either show you that nothing's there, or it's going to show you that something's there. It's not going to show you what's there. And it's up to, you know, your technology, your analytics, you know, interpretation of the data to figure out like, okay, does it move like a fish? Does it move like a dolphin, like a seal? Like, how does this thing move?
Okay.
So there was another, another operation, Operation Deep Scan, that was conducted in 1987. So 24 boats equipped with echo sounding equipment were deployed across the width of the loch. Because remember, like I said, it's incredibly long, but relative to its length, it's very narrow. It's about 2 miles wide at its widest point. So they basically took 24 boats, gave them all sonar location equipment, spread them out in a line like you would a search party, right? Like everybody walks linked arm in arm, right? So that nobody can miss anything. So according to BBC News, the scientists had made sonar contact with an unidentified object of unusual size and strength. The researchers returned, rescanning the area. Images seemed to indicate debris at the bottom of the loch, although there was motion in three of the pictures. There was speculation based on the size and how they moved that they were seals that had entered the loch.
Okay.
Sonar expert Daryl Lawrence, founder of Lawrence Electronics, donated a number of echo sounder units. After examining a sonar return indicating a large moving object at a depth of 590 feet, Lawrence said, "There's something here that we don't understand, and there's something here that's larger than a fish. Maybe some species that hasn't been detected before. I don't know." So again, all of this sonar stuff is leading back to a lot of I don't knows.
Okay.
So there is a piece of evidence that I'm going to introduce that on its surface, you would say, okay, well, this completely eliminates the chance.
Oh, that's an interesting thing to do. Just wait for the river card, right?
Well, so in 2018, they did what's called a DNA survey, okay? So an international team consisting of researchers from all over the world did a DNA survey of the lake looking for unusual species. And so basically they take samples, and they take a lot of samples, and they just basically break it down into what kind of DNA is in this water. So anything that leaves behind a DNA trace obviously goes into the water. And so
So skin, scales, feces, urine.
Yeah, all that good stuff that we drink and swim in when we jump into a lake. That's what it's looking for. And it breaks down, you know, into species. The results published in 2019, or there was no DNA of large fish such as sharks, sturgeons, or catfish. Okay, that's one of the theories, is that it's some kind of one of these large fish. Catfish grow huge. Mm-hmm. Sturgeons are huge. We already talked about how sharks have already been known to swim upstreams, right?
Right.
So they didn't find any DNA of that. There was no otter or seal DNA either. That's one of the rubs.
Okay.
Because those are two species that are known to be in the loch because they are seen.
Okay.
Even though I'm presenting this as saying, okay, well, a DNA survey didn't find anything. Why are you bringing that up? Well, because they also didn't find something that we know for a fact is there. Right? Now, they're not there all the time, right? It's not like a normal place to find seals and a normal place to find these otters, but they have been spotted and they have been found there. And not in a way like, oh, we think it's a seal. No, they have seen seals in the loch. So the fact that this DNA survey missed something that we know for a fact is occasionally there means that this survey that was being touted as like, look, we killed Nessie because there's nothing unusual. We didn't find anything that we can't explain in this DNA survey. That's cool, but your DNA survey also is missing a lot of gaps. It's got holes in it. It's not perfect.
Okay.
So a lot of eel DNA was found. So the leader of the study said he could not rule out the possibility of eels of extreme size. Though none were found, none were caught. The other possibility is that the large amount of eel DNA simply comes from a lot of smaller eels, right? They can't really differentiate. They just know they're finding a lot of DNA from an eel, from eels.
Okay.
No evidence of any reptilian sequences were found. So he goes on record, he says, quote, "So I think we can be fairly sure that there's probably not a giant scaly reptile swimming around in Loch Ness."
Okay.
But I never said it was a giant scaly reptile. My premise here is that there is just something unusual living in the loch that people are seeing, right?
Right.
Like, we hear, like, oh, it's the Loch Ness Monster. That means it's got to be big and scary and dangerous, right? Like, the classic image that pops into your head is a plesiosaur, right? With the long neck, right? People are like, oh, yeah, it's a plesiosaur that lives in there. There's no evidence of that. The picture that actually spawned that thinking, it's a famous photo. It's called the Surgeon's Photo. And it was actually proven to be a hoax. It was a submarine with, like, a head attachment, right? It was, like, the prevailing photo for, like, 50 years, and then it was discovered to be a hoax and all that
stuff. It's still the one they use, even though it's been disproven. Yeah.
I guarantee you, if you've done any research on it, if you even go to the Wikipedia page, that's the picture.
It's the picture. Yeah.
People look at that and they're like, oh, it's a plesiosaur. It's a giant dinosaur living in there. I'm not saying it's a giant dinosaur. I'm not trying to make that case, right? Before, with the Bigfoot case, I was making the case that would lend us to say this is what it looks like, right? Humanoid, bipedal, ape-like, right? That's what we were going for. The Loch Ness Monster has more vagueness in it. A lot of people that have these sightings only see a hump in the water, right? They see a giant wake pattern like a boat, but there's no boat there. So something's moving just under the water really fast that's really big. You know, they'll see things breach the surface that are really big, but it's a split second and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. I'm not making the case that the Loch Ness Monster is a plesiosaur or even a reptile or an amphibian. I'm making the case that there is something living in the loch that is most likely of an unusual size for whatever it is. Maybe it's a new breed of eel, right? Maybe it's like a breed of eel that's grown super large. You want to talk about a species that would be able to move from freshwater to saltwater. I could very easily imagine a large eel developing that sort of ability. Something along those lines of something that we haven't been able to catch and explain yet. Most likely due to its infrequency of being there, because like I said, the loch is large, it's murky, and it has access to the ocean. So something that's only there once a year, right, to feed, to give birth, maybe it's migrating. Maybe it doesn't actually even just go to the loch. Maybe that's just the one place that, since everybody has claimed to see it and is looking, but that's where it keeps getting seen. Maybe the loch is just a detour. That's the case that I lay before you, is that there is some ocean creature that periodically travels by and into the loch. The loch, given its immense size, immense volume, incredible murkiness, rendering optics unusable, sonar being a very spotty thing, that at best have come up with ambiguity. Either we found nothing or we found something and we don't know what it is. We've got an uncountable number of eyewitness testimony, right? All that sort of stuff that we, again, I'm going to not really credit too much because it's the phenomenon of people are looking for something, so they're seeing what they want to see. I have no way of telling you whether
right.
Mary Sue's eyewitness account on her honeymoon is valid or not. You know what I mean? There's right. There's a lot of photos that have been debunked. There's a lot of photos that, again, just like with Bigfoot, people are on the fence about. They're like, it could be fake, but it also could be real. We can't tell. There's no definitive. Nobody can come to a consensus on this one and say, hey, this one's definitely fake. And the more of those that exist, you know, even if there's a 1% chance for it to be real, the more of those inconclusive photos that exist, the bigger and bigger chance that the law of large numbers takes over. We also know, based on the data from that DNA survey, that they were unable to catch things that we know for a fact do live in the loch. One of the people involved in that acknowledges that there is uncertainty. Seals and otters, two species known to appear in the loch at least occasionally, weren't detected. While 20% of the DNA collected was, quote, unexplained. And that's normal for an eDNA study, but it does leave room.
Okay. That's a big, that's a fifth.
Again, it falls under the realm of the sonar, right? It's telling you, hey, we didn't find any, there's a good chance we didn't find anything that's like a plesiosaur living in this water.
Yeah.
But it's still got holes, just like the sonar does.
Right.
And it's still got vagueness. It's still got ambiguity. And really, that's the argument that I'm presenting, is that the ocean is big enough and weird enough, and there's enough weird stuff that lives in it that we have no idea about. And maybe one of those weird things just happens to have an ancestral homeland in the Scottish Highlands and periodically returns there. And I mean, the first real accounts of Loch Ness date all the way back to like the 1800s, like late 1800s. And then it really started getting published in like the early 1900s. So Mr. Kyle, I ask you,
yeah,
after being presented with all of the vagueness and ambiguity surrounding Nessie, is it possible?
I'm not ready to answer yet.
He looks so conflicted, folks.
I'm not going to lie to you. Folks, I want to be clear about a few things real quick. I'm suffering from a weeks-long allergy attack.
That's fine. I'll take you in your moment of weakness.
I think I'm on what I think it's fair to call a home cocktail of allergy remedies. Many that the boxes specifically say you should not mix. I have been.
Listen, I didn't drug you.
Right.
So whatever state you come to this battle in.
My Zizol Alchemy, shout out to the brand name that's been getting me through the last couple of years, but has recently not been doing as well as I'd hoped. I also just got a new dog. I'm very tired. So I've been listening. I picked up everything. I made sure to pay attention, and I did pay attention, but I have some holes that until I fill them with at least what you think, I can't tell you what I think. I'll say this. I was incredibly surprised by the size of the lake. I won't lie to you. I didn't think it was that big. I'm often surprised by the size of bodies of water. I don't know why. I just am. Like the Great Lakes, when you tell me how big they are, I'm shocked by it. Like that they generate their own waves, it's shocking. The Dead Sea, things like that. I'm often surprised that like things are as big as they are. So that set aside, you interestingly said at the end, you think this is potentially a larger land, a larger amount of space to cover than Bigfoot.
Not a larger space, a more difficult space.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you for the clarification.
With Bigfoot, we have satellites and planes, and you can have big expeditions and vehicles and stuff like you can set up an operating base and just be out in the woods for a year.
That was a sticking point. I was a little bit for looking for clarification. Thank you for that. The clarification helps.
If you do take into account that the loch does have access to the ocean yeah. is 100% blows Bigfoot and anything else out of the water.
The ocean, if this argument were the ocean, we wouldn't have an argument. I would give you it's possible before you even had to make your case, because the ocean is, I genuinely believe, so vast and so
weird. It's weird, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on down there that we will never find. Species have come into existence, lived millions of years and died, and we've never found them, and maybe never will. You know, unless it's a vertebrate leaving behind bones, it doesn't leave behind anything. So jellyfish and all these different things that will just melt into the water over time that we will never find. So my issue with Nessie, and I'm actually working through the issue as we literally speak right now, is the question of what do we think it is? And I didn't feel you going down that path. And I think it's because there's such a lack of knowledge about it. It's not like Bigfoot, where you look at it and you say, oh, it's similar to the great ape line. You can even narrow down based on type and look and size what the potential of it could be. And you hone in and you say, let's look at this. Nessie is so vague, right? It's almost whatever your daydream of Nessie is, that's what it is.
Well, and that's why I brought in the DNA, because I wanted to try to eliminate this idea that Nessie is this long-necked dinosaur, because I don't think that that's possible.
Okay, great. I don't either, which is actually the biggest stumbling block to me giving you that it's possible.
I do not think it's a prehistoric dinosaur from, and especially since the Loch is only about 10,000 years old because of the glacial melt and everything that created it. I am not of the opinion that it is a giant reptilian dinosaur living in the Loch. What I am trying to convince you of is that there is something unknown of big enough size to be recognized but not identified. They're looking at it and they're saying, that's big and we can't tell what it is. And people keep seeing something that's big that we can't identify over and over and over. Eventually, they would say, okay, we've identified that it's a seal that keeps making these things. But they haven't been able to say that. Oh, we know that it is a giant catfish, but they haven't been able to identify that that's what it is. I'm saying that there's something that is currently unknown that is living at least part-time in the Loch that is large enough to be noticed, right? I'm not talking about like a little minnow, a new species of minnow.
Right.
It's large enough to make ripples, to appear on sonar, to be visually spotted. It's large enough to leave a visual trail of evidence.
Sure.
But we haven't been able to figure out what it is.
Okay, there's my last question, then I'm going to give you my answer. You can re-ask the question. Do you believe, in your personal opinion, and I need your personal opinion, and I will give you my honest answer after you give it to me. Do you believe that whatever it is, should it be found? Do you believe it is a species we have yet never discovered? Or do you think it is, if we were to find it, right? You have to put your money on red or black. You're walking up to the roulette table. I'm going to tell you Nessie exists in the vacuum of possible. But you have to tell me what you think is likelier, that it is an undiscovered species of something that we don't know, or that it is a hybrid of something we're very familiar with, like a seal or an eel or a fish, even if it's a big one or something, you know, like a version of it. But we can tell by its DNA when we found it someday and pull it off a boat. Oh, it's an eel cousin, but it's 45 feet long. And that's amazing. But that's what it is. Do you think it's we've never seen it before and we'll be like, holy shit, it's like this, or oh, that's just a giant eel. When you give me the answer to that, I'll give you my answer to it's possible or not.
If I, like you said, if I had to put my money on it, I would go down the route that I went with Bigfoot, in that it is related to something that we either know of or knows existed, but we don't have concrete proof of.
It's possible. I'll give it to you.
Maybe it's an eel, like you said, that's just, it's an undiscovered species of eel that grows huge and feeds on
it's
seals
possible.
Or something. Like, who knows, right?
That's where I am. We're in the same place. I do not think there is something in that lake we've never seen before. I do think there's a version of something.
Yeah, a descendant, a mutation, a version. I don't think it's like some weird thing that we're going to say nothing else like this exists on Earth. I think it's going to be, right, like a version of something that we've never seen a version of it before.
Right. I actually think the likeliest possibility is that it is something that is so similar to something else. And I hone in on eels because I know they are native to the area. I know that eels, they occur in British cuisine a lot. Like, I know they're of that area. Like, they have them. So I know that they're indigenous in some way, shape, or form to that water-like area. I think it's so similar, if it exists at all, to something like an eel, that I think if smaller versions of it were to wash up on the shore, nobody would ever notice. And that potentially, if they get bigger, then they become something different. You know what I mean? Like almost like a baby or a younger version of it, say, were to die and wash up on the shores of the Loch, and someone would go, oh, that must just be an eel. And it wouldn't catch your eye. But if you were to throw it, you know, a zoologist were to you know, take its DNA and be like, oh, actually, this eel supposedly died off 200 million years ago, but some of it got in this Loch. But we've never taken the time to be like, oh, it's actually an identifiable different strain of eel family or whatever. I think I would go with that. And that is possible. That I'll buy. I do not, and I want to be real clear, I don't think it's a mythological creature. I do not believe it is a prehistoric dinosaur or shark or something like that. So I just want to lay that down on the table, because if you went down that route and you left a little ambiguity and I had to close you in on it and close it off and be like, I'm not giving you a possible till you tell me you don't think I'm saying yes to Brontosaurus in the water. Tell me now that's not what you're asking, and I'll tell you I think it's possible. Because I actually do. I think there's some, it's a very, very big body of water, like you described. It's very, very large. And I don't think sonar is the believable like thing that we sometimes want it to be. I watched some specials about trying to find bodies in small ponds, and the sonar does not give you what you need it to give you. And like the murkiness of the sediment kicking up in the water, and even those small ponds make it really, really hard to see. So I don't know that you'll ever be able to quantify, you know, what's in there, or be able to actually give yourself a picture of the bottom of that lock. Probably never. And eels can live in the crevices and the nooks and the crannies. So do I think it's something that looks a hell of a lot like something we know that a fisherman might see and never even think he's looking at what Loch Ness is? Yeah, I'd go down that road. That if died in youth, it would be 5, 6, 7 feet long, and he'd think it's an adult, but it's actually a baby, and that the adult maybe gets up to 25, 30, 40 feet long. A 40-foot eel's insane. Like, I could see that cresting out of the water at some point, and someone going, what the hell was that? So I'd buy that. I'd buy that. So I'll give you it's possible, because we've zoned in more tightly on what I'm agreeing to out on the internet. But I do not agree that it is like some creature of the deep.
Listen, I'm going to take this win, because I had this scheduled as a loss. I know you had this scheduled as a loss for me.
I did. And because listen, I love you, man. And I'm not going to dig a grave for you just to watch you like crawl into it and then throw dirt on top of you. What you said, I think is possible, but I made sure to make you really own that you are not asking me one thing. You're asking me another thing. And that's fine. That's fine. That's what you're saying. I'll agree that's possible.
Listen, this was a Pyrrhic victory, right? There was great sacrifice in this victory, because I had to give up the idea of a mystical, magical Nessie in order to get the win.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I had to leave my plesiosaur Nessie behind in order to beat you.
Well, you know what? Listen, you're a little bit like the Russians in every war. You're burning all of your own towns and heading back to the one castle. But I'm going to get you there. Okay. I think, you know, I've lost track of the score. I'm not going to lie to the people out there listening. We will recap the score as the season currently stands on the next episode, because the math has kind of escaped me. But I know we're pretty neck and neck. I think it's really tied. I actually think it's tied with one. You have a game in hand, to use the parlance of world soccer. I think you have a game in hand on the table, but it's possible. What you said is possible. I just want to be clear about what I've said, because at some point, I'm going to be so, Bobby, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it as an actor and a playwright. And someday someone's going to say, that man said he thought Loch Ness Monster was real. He should not be allowed to speak at this university or to have his play open in town. He believes in the Loch Ness Monster. So I just want to be clear. No, I believe in a subspecies of eel that we've never found or something like that.
For the record, the people of the Scottish Highlands would celebrate you, because Nessie brings in, I think one of the figures I saw was about $80 million worth of tourist money annually.
Right. Which is why I hinted at it. I didn't even hint at it. I straight up called them out on it. My last name comes from Scotland. My family, part of my father's side of the family, Scottish. I love them as people. I've loved the culture. I will tell you that I don't blame them for not doing everything they can to disprove Nessie, because that's a small little corner of the world, a nice, beautiful little corner of the world that gets an unreasonably large amount of tourism dollars off of a ridiculous little thing, and they should never disprove it. God love them. No, open your little restaurants and your fishing boats and your tours and have people come and stop by and see your lovely town. Never, ever disprove it. Keep going. As long as people will give you money to talk about a creature underneath the boat that titillates them and scares them as they glide over the dark water, great. Don't ever throw that away. But I know that's what you're doing. I know you all know. It's okay. It's all right. It's fine. But don't lie to me. Don't lie to old Uncle Kyle, okay? When I come into town, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because of all of our millions of listeners around the world, and especially our special listeners in the United Kingdom, you know, if you see me coming, give me the wink and the special tour where we're like, yeah, it's not real. But anyway, it's possible, okay? You got to win.
Man, I feel drained.
Oh, like you, oh, Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill forever.
You know when you look at an insurmountable task and you just don't think you're ever going to get there?
How charmed your life is. This was the insurmountable task that had you sweating for weeks. All right, you got it. Again, shout out to all the people that are listening and all the new places that we've been finding out we have listeners. It's very cool. If you'd like to hear a certain topic, if you have an opinion about a topic, if you think we blew an entire topic on one episode and you have all the facts that would show us how wrong we really were, possiblepod@gmail.com. You can also go to I Mean It's Possible on Instagram, which is, you know, the social media platform we use the most. Give us a shout, send us an email, send us a line, tell us where you're from, tell us where you're listening from. And, you know, any feelings you have about any of these topics, give us a shout. We'd love to hear from you. So, Bobby, congratulations on your, I think it's fair to call, most ridiculous win of the season. And we will move to next week. Yeah, you kicked a field goal at the end of the game. You're leaving Baltimore with a win on Monday night, and you know you didn't deserve it. And Lamar Jackson played better than you, and you're going home, and he's upset, but he knows he's better. So, and I'm not a Ravens fan, but that's what this feels like. It feels like one of those sneaky wins the Patriots pulled out over the last couple of years in Baltimore, where you're like, we didn't deserve that. So, until next week.
Signing off.
All right.